let's get the William Nylander stuff out of the way, because yeah, we're trying to decipher what's real, what's normal practices by front office, and what is abnormal, right? We've seen Kyle Dubas traveling all over the place, potential trade partners for William Nylander. We've also seen 3 straight games scouted of the Tampa Bay Lightning. We've seen the Carolina Hurricanes send like their entire scouting that part of their organization to Toronto to watch this Maple Leafs team. What of that have you noticed as being very abnormal?
Well, I don't know if any of it is. I mean, GMs sometimes like to get out of town. You know, the team's not playing well. Sometimes you'll go on a scouting trip, you know. Sometimes it's just to get out of town. Sometimes it's really to scout, but most of the time it's just to get out of town. You know, I don't care, take too much for granted. I keep hearing from people around the league that they're not shopping them. Well, nobody shops anybody anymore. You know that? You don't shop William Nylander. You don't have to shop William Nylander because, you know, to say you're not shopping them, that doesn't mean anything. If you're taking calls on them, that means you're listening. It's not about shopping them. It's how do you make a deal? You can't shop anybody anymore because if you do, everybody in the world knows about it, okay? So nobody shops anybody anymore unless it's a lesser player that nobody really cares about as far as, you know, the word getting out. So, you know, I think you just take calls. When people know that somebody's, you know, there's issues, they phone and ask. So to say he's not being shopped, I agree, but that doesn't mean they're not talking to people about potential trades.
I did like the report by Elliott, though, just because in his 31 thoughts, it was basically about Tampa Bay and sending a pro scout there for 3 straight games. And I wonder how often maybe you did that.
Well, it depends on the schedule. You know, it depends on who's coming in, because you may be looking at a couple of teams. You may be talking to a couple of teams. So it could be the way the schedule is that, okay, it's convenient, it's cheap to leave the person there for the 3 nights so they catch – stadium. Scouts, lots of times, pro scouts make their schedule up a month in advance, you know, that, okay, I can catch 3 teams here, I can catch X team there, and that's how they do their schedules, based on economics of seeing the teams. If it's, you know what, if it's really gets to a serious point, then you know, when Rick Dudley comes in, you know, although he travels all over the world scouting, that's what he seems to like to do, but you know, when a more important person in an organization comes in, that then it means something, you know.
Okay.
I remember flying to Anaheim, going to watch a guy, flew to Arizona to watch a guy play, and I went to the game with my shorts on because I just wanted to go and sit in the stands and nobody to recognize me, you know, and it was perfect there. Nobody had a clue who the hell I was. You know, I didn't, you know, there's only 6, but you're nervous because there's only 6,000 people there and they could, you know, you could stand out, you know.
Yeah, yes, that's true. So we know that there is a code among GMs.
We've seen anybody with shorts on in the Leafs games lately?
No, I don't think anybody's been wearing shorts around Toronto for quite some time. The shorts are on hiatus. The only guys in Toronto wearing shorts for the next couple months are going to be the Raptors at the games.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
So, we saw when there was offer sheets, is sometimes we don't see this because there seems to be some type of a code among front offices of don't max out our don't put our guy on an offer sheet. Like maybe there's some exceptions to this every once in a while, but generally it's frowned upon. And we talk about it often as fans as there being a bit of a boys club up top and trying to keep salaries down and blah, 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 blah. But I do wonder with a guy.
It's not accurate.
It's not accurate. OK, so I was thinking about Nylander, though, in the sense that other front offices can talk to him right now. And I wonder if you think that's happened or if there's a respect level amongst teams where you stay on the fringes and you wait until Kyle Dubas officially, well, you said doesn't shop him, but that you just continue to ask, go through Dubas and rather through Nylander.
You know what, it would surprise me if a number of teams haven't talked to Lewis Gross about him. That you wouldn't talk to William Nylander. You'd talk to his agent. You'd say, okay, what's going on here? You know, what's the dollar amount that this is going to cost us to get done? Why are there no offer sheets? There's no offer sheets because one reason there's no offer sheets because everybody's got issues and you're saying, okay, if I do this, What am I going to be faced with this year, or next year, or the year after? Like, somebody's going to come after me and do an offer sheet. That's partially why it happens. And the other reason is you'd always rather make it a deal versus, what Nashville, what happened with Weber. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was the craziest, dumbest deal on the face of the earth. And, you know, they matched and it cost a fortune. You know, it cost an absolute fortune for Nashville to match that crazy deal. So, you know, they're typically bad deals, or teams will match them unless they're really crazy. You know, this goes back to Fedorov being offered the offer sheet from Carolina and the Red Wings match, and it goes to the Weber offer sheet. It goes to Kessler offer sheet. There's all kinds of them, but they're just dumb. They just cost teams a lot of money because, I don't know. And then you're leaving yourself open, you're going to get nailed.
Okay. So if we do...
So it's not a code, in my opinion. It's common sense.
Yeah. Well, there does seem to be, even when you're saying that, a little bit of a revenge element here, where you're saying, if I offer sheet you...
Exactly.
Yeah, but that to me is almost, it's insinuating, like, it's a mutually assured destruction standpoint. Mm-hmm. Like, no, people aren't doing it in terms
nuclear
of...
nuclear war. Yeah,
yeah, like their best interest is not maybe that season. It's like, if you can go out and get a better guy and then you're worried about someone offer sheeting someone worse, like, yeah, so be it. That's what happened with the whole Dustin Penner thing. It's like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Offer sheet Dustin Penner. No big deal.
Fighting a barn.
Imagine doing an offer sheet on Dustin Penner. Like, seriously.
Didn't he get hurt?
I mean, if you're going to do an offer sheet, like, anyway.
Yeah.
Didn't make any sense to me from day one, but anyway, that's
fine. That's again revenge. It was because of revenge. If we anticipate Nylander does become available, or if this does not get worked out with the Leafs, I was wondering what you think, how much his market is going to be affected by the fact that he would obviously still be looking for something around that $8 million number, and that if you're not only parting with assets and then you have to pay William Nylander this big money deal, I would think that the assets diminish to a certain degree.
Well, is he asking? The $8 million is crazy. I mean, if Lewis is asking for that, he's, or the father or the kid, whoever is asking, I'm not buying it. I know it was $8 million originally, the Draisaitl. Is it eight? Is it seven? Is it six and a half? Is it six and a half on a short term deal? I don't know what it is, but if it's eight, then he's not going to play for a while. You know, because it's idiotic to pay him that kind of money. Mm. If you can get him done at 6.5 on a reasonable deal, I mean, it should come somewhere between Ehlers and Pasternak. It should come in there. Those are the comparables that make the most sense to me. You got Ehlers there, you got Pasternak. I mean, you've got Goudreau that signed a couple of years ago at, 6.6? I mean, he's not Johnny Goudreau. Is he as good as Johnny Goudreau? Is he going to be as good as Johnny Goudreau? Right now, he's not. But is he going to be in a few years? Maybe. I mean, is he going to be better than Ehlers? I think so. Is he going to be as good as Pasternak? I don't think so, but he might be. I mean, who knows what he's going to be. But it should come in, and that's between 6 and 6.6. That makes sense to me on a long-term deal, on a 6-7 year deal. So if Lewis is asking for way more than that, he's out to lunch. And if the league, that's all you can negotiate off is comparables. Every right. agent knows that. And every general manager knows that. That's what you negotiate off of. If people are crazy, then it takes longer to do till they come to their senses.
Yeah. And he hits free agency.
Or you trade the guy or you trade him.
He hits.
But here's the deal, guys. December 1st, this is an asset in a salary cap era and a competitive area where you've got a short window to win. How do you keep this asset on the sidelines till next September or October?
Can't.
I mean, how do you do that? I mean, every player in the Leafs are going to say, okay, who are we going to get for this guy that's going to help us beat the Bruins in the first round or Tampa in the first round? And are we going to leave him sit on the sidelines and we don't have him or somebody else to help us win in a short window era?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And that's why I wonder if Kyle Dubas is going to start to move the number up a little bit, because James Myrtle has been kind of hammering this really good point for a little while, and he wrote a piece on it on The Athletic today just about how the Leafs are going to end up saving cap space on William Nylander if they end up doing a long-term deal, because he has to get the prorated contract for this season, right? Which lowers the value on the remaining contract. And so if you're Kyle Dubas and you're looking at this now and you're saying, okay, why can't I get closer to the number? This feels like it actually would have worked out for both parties, because William Nylander can get paid. He can still get his $7 million a season. But if he gets that, it's only going to come in at around like $6.5 million for the rest of his contract if he does do something that's like a 7/6 or a 7/5.
I guess the bottom line to me is, if you have to overpay, like, and I, when we don't know the numbers, it's really hard. If it's eight, it's ludicrous on Lewis's part. And I know Lewis, and I happen to like him. It's ludicrous if that's what he's looking for, because it doesn't make sense to me. Okay, if it's 6.5, and you have to over, and say you really only want to pay him 5.9 or 6, but if you give him an extra $300,000 or $400,000, nobody wants to do that. But this is a movable player at up to $6.5 million. This is a very easily movable player. So if it's not working in a year or two, or when your salary cap crunch hits, you're going to move them and you're going to get your assets. And, you know, and there's a ton of teams that would take them at that number, because people need scoring. I mean, I watch LA Kings play. I watch Anaheim play. I watch St. Louis play. I watch Carolina play. I mean, how many teams could use this guy? I mean,
everybody.
Columbus, Chicago. I mean, well, Chicago's got the salary problems, but I don't know.
Yeah,
lots of teams could use him, because a lot of teams can't score right now.
Yeah, so that's his concern. Yeah, is being moved at that number.
Like the Boston Bruins, are going to play them tomorrow night. Could they use this guy in the wing?
Yeah, anybody could. Anybody could use more talent.
So yeah, exactly.
Speaking of more talent on the wing, you guys had Connor Brown on the show today, and he scored his first non-empty netter of the season the other night. And we've made this comparison on yesterday's show, but that there's no Matthews and there's no Nylander. And so you're saying, okay, well, it's tougher for guys because their matchups are more difficult, and that's why maybe we haven't seen more from that third line. But conversely, when they have been in the lineup, people are making excuses for them in the sense of, well, you know, they don't get a lot of ice time, and it's a very limited opportunity that guys like Par Lindholm and Connor Brown get, and so you can't really put too much pressure on them. Where do you weigh in on that?
I mean, I happen to be a Connor Brown fan. I mean, he scored 20 goals in the league, and I think he had 14 last year. I think he's a valuable type player, and I think that I asked him today, does it piss you off you're not in the top six? And no, I really appreciate the guys I'm playing with. Yeah, right. Okay. I'm not buying it. And does he want Nylander back? No, of course he doesn't. I mean, where does that put him? If Nylander's back. So I just think he's not playing with guys that are good enough. And, you know, Kadri couldn't score. He had trouble scoring. And now that his line's better, he's getting points. I mean, everybody needs support. Everybody needs help. Steve Yzerman, you know, couldn't win anything in Detroit till he got a great supporting cast with him, and then he became the greatest captain in the history of hockey.
Yeah.
Once the supporting cast becomes better, everybody needs support, and right now I don't think that the guys on their third and fourth line, other than Connor Brown, are you know, in fairness to them, they've got limited NHL experience, and that's, you know, they both may be good players, but right now they're limited experience, and I think he's paying a price for it, and that's fine. He's a quality guy. He understands that, I guess.
Yeah, and Par Lindholm at least kills penalties pretty well.
The bottom line is, the frustrating part of I'm him is Kapanen has nudged him out of that spot to move up. That's what's happened, if the truth is known.
Yeah, feels like Kapanen has a little bit more offensive upside. But I'm interested in the
but
centers.
He can't get on the power play.
Yeah, I'm interested in your thought about the center depth on this team,
because Hyman has to play in the power play.
Yeah, he's on that second unit now. Yeah. When this team's fully healthy, you don't need another center. Whatever. Par Lindholm playing 5 minutes a game, sure. When you got Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Nazem Kadri. Right now it's rearing its ugly head. Maybe you'd like an upgrade over Par Lindholm on that fourth line as the centerman, but that guy's only playing 5 minutes a game. How do you prioritize maybe looking at bringing in another centerman, or is that not even a thought for you?
I wouldn't. I'd be focused on bringing in a defenseman, to be quite honest. I think if they can upgrade that position, I mean, Morgan Riley's been so good. I Ron Hainsey's been fine, but I mean, he's such, you know, he got tired down the stretch last year, and they decided they wanted to play him right till the final game. And I think they need more depth on the blue line versus worrying about their third line. The third line will be fine when they get healthy. Mm-hmm. And the fourth line is a time killer, you know, so they're fine.
Yeah.
So Vegas is in town the other night, and I couldn't help but think about Thomas Tatar, because the Habs are off to this incredible start, and everyone's talking about Max Domi and Bergevin's resurgence as a respected GM and getting his getting off the hot seat a little bit. But Tatar has now got 13 points in 15 games after Vegas gave up on him after a quiet playoff run. And I feel like that could end up starting to pick up a little bit of steam in terms of a terrible mistake. It feels like things are starting to finally normalize for Vegas and things are breaking against them now.
Yeah, you know what, I don't, you get into a situation where you really like your group and you think about Vegas at that time when Tatar came there, people were shaking their heads why they gave up a first, second, and third round pick to get him. It was a crazy deal to begin with, an overpayment of assets for that player. And then he doesn't play because they like their group so much, they're playing so well that you just don't want to break that top six up. And then he slides to the third line, and they didn't even want to break up their third line, so he can't get in the lineup. So I get that because your loyalty and your team's going so well, you know, that it wasn't a good fit. Tatar has always been a pretty good player in Detroit, a little inconsistent at time, but, you know, right now it's he's been really good. I agree with that. He's been terrific. He fits in great. He's a new style gamer. He's also playing with a guy that's, you know, the group is playing real well, and that's helped him. So, you know, I don't blame Vegas. You know, George was lucky enough to get rid of get a decent asset. If Pacioretty ever starts to play again, I haven't seen him play in 2 years, so I hope it happens soon.
By the way, for the record, I was with you on the Evgeny Malkin supplemental discipline, and obviously you didn't get anything. But yeah.
Oh my God! People want him to get 5 games for that protection. Like, are you kidding me? Like, seriously, what is going on? I mean, it's hard on the head.
Yeah.
I'm watching that last night, reading stuff. People saying, "Oh, he should get 5 games." I mean, oh my God, give me a break.
Yeah. Oh, she ran his face into his shoulder. Shouldn't have done that. Doug, appreciate it.
Thanks, Mac.
Thanks, guys.